While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some times from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
A very good afternoon, Namibia. This is On The Reading News Analysis, and welcome, where the headlines meet perspective. Now, as your trusted source for the latest news, developments, and insights from Namibia, Africa, and around the world, we go beyond the headlines to examine the issues shaping our societies, our economies, and the future, from governance and public policy to business, technology, health, climate change, and international affairs. We provide context, all the context and the analysis that is needed to understand the stories that matter most. Now, this afternoon, we focus on major developments and conversations shaping public discourse across Namibia and beyond as the week draws to a close. Now, among the issues on our radar are ongoing efforts to strengthen governance, transparency and accountability in public institutions, developments in the national economy and investment environment, regional political and economic trends, and global developments influencing policy, trade and decision making both at home and abroad. We also examine the opportunities and the challenges facing Namibia as the country continues to pursue economic growth, job creation, infrastructure development, energy security and social progress in a technological innovation to environmental sustainability and regional cooperation. Now, today's discussions highlight the factors shaping the future of our nation. As citizens, businesses and policymakers navigate a rapidly changing landscape, informed discussions remain essential and critical. Now, through balanced reporting, careful analysis and diverse perspective, we explore not only what is happening, but also what it means for communities, for institutions and future generations. Because right here on the Reading News Analysis, we believe informed citizens do build stronger communities. That is why we remain committed to delivering credible journalism, balanced reporting and thoughtful analysis that empowers you to engage with the issues affecting your daily life and the future of our nation. Now, through comprehensive coverage, expert insights, exclusive interviews, and timely updates, we connect the dots behind today's major developments and emerging trends. Now, whether it is a policy shift, an economic milestone, a technological breakthrough, or an international event with local implications, well, our goal remains the same. That is to keep you informed, keep you engaged, and well ahead of the conversation. Now, as we head into the weekend, we continue to monitor the stories shaping Namibia, shaping Africa, and the wider world, bringing you the facts, the context, and the analysis that matter most. So stay connected with us across our broadcasting and digital platforms for the latest updates throughout the day. Ensure that you download the Eagle FM app or listen via the website, or perhaps listen through our radio frequencies. Now, do join in on the discussion, share your views, and be part of a growing community that values informed dialogue and credible news, because this right here is On The Reading News Analysis, delivering the facts, examining the impact, and helping you make sense of the stories that are shaping Namibia, shaping Africa, and the world today. Now, let's get right into the stories that are on the radar today. Yesterday, public consultations on the nuclear bill formed part of Namibia's efforts to establish or modernize its legal and regulatory framework for nuclear activities. And the discussion was being held at the Government Information Sharing Center. Now, such consultations are designed to inform the public, gather stakeholder input, and ensure transparency before legislation is finalized and considered by Parliament. Public participation is a key component of democratic lawmaking and helps identify concerns relating to safety, to environmental protection, governance, and economic impacts. Now, the question on many people's minds may be, why is Namibia discussing a nuclear bill? Well, Namibia is one of the world's leading uranium-producing countries and has increasingly become involved in international nuclear governance and monitoring initiatives. Now, the country is scheduled to host a major nuclear monitoring exercise organized by the Comprehensive Nuclear Test Ban Treaty Organization in 2026, highlighting its growing role in global nuclear affairs. Now, a nuclear bill would typically seek to establish a comprehensive legal framework for nuclear and radioactive materials, strengthen nuclear safety, security, and safeguards, ensure compliance with international treaties and obligations, define the responsibilities of regulatory authorities, regulate the handling, the transport, the storage, and the disposal of radioactive materials, as well as protect public health and the environment. Now, the discussion covered on what the public will want assurance. Of course, the public will want assurance that any nuclear-related activities are subject to strict safety standards and oversight to prevent accidents and protect communities. And of course, when we're talking about nuclear and a nuclear bill, a lot of people or a lot of on a lot of minds of many people will be safety, accidents, concerns about how are we protected. Won't this probably work against that, against us? And that's why stakeholders would need to abide by the rules and regulations stipulated out into that bill. And also for environmental protection. Now, as Namibia's uranium mining sector raises questions about groundwater protection, waste management, land rehabilitation, and long-term environmental monitoring. Talking about environmental protection is just one of the things on that radar. Economic opportunities in regards to this nuclear bill. Supporters may argue that stronger nuclear registrations can actually attract investment, can enhance uranium value chains, as well as support scientific research and create skilled employment opportunities. Not overlooking international obligations, whereby Namibia is a member of several international nuclear governance frameworks, and it must therefore maintain legislation that aligns with global standards on nuclear safety, non-proliferation, and also monitoring. And although Namibia does not currently operate a nuclear power plant, discussions about nuclear legislation often raise broader questions regarding future energy security, electricity generation, and the country's long-term energy mix. Now, recent public debates have considered whether nuclear energy could eventually complement Namibia's renewable energy ambitions. And these consultations are quite important at this particular point in time because it's important because nuclear registrations affects public safety, you know. And like I said, on many minds of many Namibians, first and foremost, before we talk about investment and everything else, finances, it will be public safety, environmental sustainability, national security, then foreign investment, international relations, as well as future energy and industrial developments. Now, for policymakers, the consultation provides an opportunity to test public opinion and improve the bill before it moves further through the legislative process. And for citizens, it is an opportunity to raise concerns, to seek clarification and contribute to decisions that may have long-term national implications. Now, I don't know if it has been of this nature before in the past, but I don't know. But it seems like recent, I've come to notice that before anything is actually put out there, before policies are actually implemented, especially on those that raise greater concern for many Namibians, consultation is one of the things that it's usually put in place, or nationwide consultations per region, so that Namibians can have their say and have their input, and also just add or perhaps have questions that they have addressed, you know, by the right people who are governing those. And that is quite very important, because at the end of the day, we don't want to just hear what so has been passed without also sharing our input. And sometimes you are from a particular place, perhaps a particular region, and you are an environmentalist, then you are well aware of the implications that could come if so-so-so has a policy has been implemented. And so you would want to intercept it before it even goes further. But nonetheless, we have a scheduled commercial break. Let's just get that out of the way, and we're back to listen to those that we're engaging on this. Let's take a listen.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshiwana onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna emi tota njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM.
Great news, Impa just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just $36 Namibian a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription, and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything Imba has to offer at an unbeatable price. Imba, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Ilinawa, ninge kwata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM onora etatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa nora etatu natu bali o etatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Okay, now let's hear from Hilma Naimbale as well as Joseph Amon. That is, he's the deputy director in the Ministry of Health and Social Services. And Hilma Naimbale is a senior legal officer in the Office of the Attorney General, as they engaged yesterday on this.
What I've learned over the years is that a good example to use is like fire, right. A fire. Mm-hmm. So radiation is energy. Mm-hmm. So energy, as wherever the source of energy is and where the radiation source is, mm-hmm. there is the energy, or like in the case of the fire, the heat that travels from that
right.
energy source. So as the radiation moves, it moves through air, and then obviously it has different applications that it is employed in I think in Namibia, mostly in the medical sector, mm-hmm. and also in industry, there are so many types of methodologies of how it can be employed. So it's basically energy that moves through air, mm-hmm. and that can be directed. And in the case of, I think, the most, like I said, medical sector, for instance, if you go to X-rays, mm-hmm. they make use of radiation, radiation that travels through the body and forms an image at the other side of that, and that is used for diagnostic purposes. Mm-hmm. So yes, there is the connotation radiation and all that is bad right. and dangerous and all that. Mm-hmm. It just depends on the application.
Okay.
Now moving to nuclear. Mm-hmm. Nuclear, we're talking about the nucleus.
Right.
For those that, the atom.
Mm-hmm. The atoms.
The atoms, yes. Mm-hmm. So in the atom, you have the nucleus, you have your protons and electrons. Mm-hmm. So the energy that the nucleus emits from its center is the energy that you want to use. And I think the one that is mostly known and is power, mm-hmm. nuclear power.
Right.
It's where the connotation comes, or a nuclear weapon. Mm-hmm.
Power, are we referring to electricity?
Yes.
Right.
You use the nucleus because of the power source that it is. Mm-hmm. You use that heat that it produces,
mm-hmm. to
drive a turbine, mm-hmm. that produces steam, and that steam you use to generate power.
Right.
So you have that opportunity to make use of it in that positive sense, to generate power, mm-hmm. or you use it to cause destruction. And that is where the negative comes from of having a nuclear bomb, having a nuclear countries with nuclear power that are using it, you know, in that negative sense. But that is not what this bill is all about.
Right. Thank you so much.
as if we are starting from ground zero.
Right.
We currently have an act in place.
So we are not reinventing the
wheel. No.
Right.
We have an act of 2005. Mm-hmm. It's called the Atomic Energy and Radiation Protection Act that has been implemented since the early 2000s, mm-hmm. after it was enacted. So this act basically that did two things. It only established a National Radiation Protection Authority, mm-hmm. as you can see my branding over here,
right.
the NRPA, mm-hmm. and it establishes an Atomic Energy Board, mm-hmm. which is an advisory body to minister and also to the NRPA. So there you have a group of experts from different industries that represent those industries, mm-hmm. and the interest of those industries to the regulator. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that is what we've been doing, but we've realized that there are gaps.
Right.
There are opportunities that we are missing out as a country to mm-hmm. benefit from that can really change the game for us as a country. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to nuclear. Mm-hmm. So we have aspirations as a country for nuclear power. Mm-hmm. We are the third, that number keeps changing, third and fourth producer of uranium in the world,
okay.
which I think we should be very proud of. Mm-hmm. So we want to add benefit to that product. Currently, we are exporting it as it is being produced.
Right.
It is just taken in a drum out of the country. Mm-hmm. We believe that we can, as a nation, benefit much more from it.
Value addition. Right.
Exactly.
Okay.
So this act now, the bill that we are talking about here, this is the starting point of the public consultation process today here. This is a land. We are putting a stake in the ground. Mm-hmm. And from here, we are from today inviting the public to become part of this advisory mission and rollout to get the inputs and their concerns so that we also address it in the bill.
Right.
So we will start from the end of July, mm-hmm. End of June, mm-hmm. for 3 weeks into July, where we will now go out to roll out to the different regions, mm-hmm. and we will still publicize that, hopefully through your assistance also.
Absolutely.
And we were told that you can even help us when we are in the region, mm-hmm. to be able to do that, mm-hmm. to have these live sessions, mm-hmm. so that the public becomes part of it. And as part, just not just about the bill, we also want to create awareness. That's why I want to, if you allow me, go into more details, mm-hmm. of the different aspect that the bill touches on, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and how it applies in Namibia.
Thank you, Helene, for the very good question. Mm-hmm. There's a need for a new bill because currently, as Mr. Ayman have said, the scope of the current act is limited, and the bill is expanding the legal and the regulatory framework of the nuclear and radiation activities in the country, mm-hmm. and it also establishes the three key institutions. One is mm-hmm. the Nuclear Commission of Namibia, mm-hmm. and number two is the Nuclear Institute of Namibia, mm-hmm. number three is the Radiation and Nuclear Regulatory Authority of Namibia.
Right.
Currently, the current law only has established two institutions, which mm-hmm. is the Nuclear Energy Board, mm-hmm. which is an advisory body to the government, mm-hmm. when it comes to nuclear-related activities in the country.
Right.
And then the National Radiation Protection Authority, which is the regulatory body currently we have in the country. So the bill is mainly strengthening mm-hmm. the scope to be comprehensive, to cover the nuclear safety aspect of it,
right.
and then to cover the nuclear security aspect of it, mm-hmm. to cover the safeguard aspect of it, mm-hmm. and also the nuclear liability component, which was not part
of it.
Mm-hmm. And this is one of the main key aspect also, which provides insurance, mm-hmm. and we'll talk much about it when we do our consultations.
Right.
So it's mainly strengthening the...
We are talking because it is such a broad footprint in the country.
Right.
the application of radiation and nuclear, that we are basically talking about law enforcement. We are talking about all the different ministries. We are talking about industry, where we speak about even the new oil and gas, recent, where they use a lot of radioactive material also. So it is so wide that, and this is the purpose of this session and the rollout of sensitization. We want to encourage people to come forward. And if they are not able to maybe attend physically these sessions, we have taken the bill and we've placed it on the ministry's website. It is on our own website. Exactly. So there will be provisions put in place where they can read through it. If there are not clarity that they seek, they are welcome to type on that platforms their questions. We know that it is not possible for everybody to come forward and be. We are also looking at doing radio so that we give that information
to the grassroots level.
Exactly.
Right.
So that people feel free to comment and come forward with even if it's a question, you don't necessarily have to comment on the bill.
Right.
But ask, I don't understand this and that. Put scenarios so that we are able to look at those, respond to them. Because we need all this as proof of the consultation process that we have undergone.
Yeah.
And that's so critical for us to capture all the type of feedbacks and comments so that at the end we will have a close-out report post all the consultations of all the regions that we need to say how were these issues addressed in the bill.
Thank you very much. The public participation is important because number one is for transparency. We have to promote transparency, and coming up with a law or a legislation, the law is for the people and it's regulating the people who are involved. And remember, this bill is introducing new, I would call it them like entities. The Nuclear Commission.
That were not part previously.
Yes, they were not part. And they have various responsibilities. So it's also for the public to know which one will be responsible for what. They can give their inputs, they can get the information, and it's kind of like information sharing and giving each other inputs because the public might also have experience that we don't know who are living in the urban areas, especially in the community, in the rural areas. This bill is now like for Namibia Commission of Namibia will be an old policy oversight, coordination and governance body. And then the Nuclear Institute of Namibia will be for promotion and research and development for peaceful use of nuclear energy. And these are the activities like, for instance, in nuclear medicine, in the hospitals, agriculture, mining industry. They are falling under that body. And then we have our regulatory authority that will be responsible for regulating the activities that are being conducted by various entities, be it the Ministry of Health when it comes to nuclear medicine.
Or Ministry of Energy.
Ministry of Energy or Ministry of Agriculture. So it's for the public also to understand who will be responsible for what. And because the regulatory authority will be licensing these entities or applicants, those who would want to engage in nuclear activities. So during the process of licensing, public is also needed to give their input. So it's very much important also to bring them on board so that they will be able to understand what is going to take place before the activities start. Thank you very much. Participation, anyone is welcome. From individuals to the entities to, for instance, we have our people in the community areas, rural areas, they are welcome to come and participate. And law enforcement agency, anyone is welcome. Be it civil societies, they also need to provide their inputs. The the environment organization, mm-hmm. anyone is welcome, all because right. this one affects anyone.
All right.
Yeah. So.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Mr. Eamon, would you like?
Okay, and there you hear it. So let's also air our especially for those who understand the aspect of this matters. For us, the public, who obviously might not really understand in depth about it, might not really have something to put on the table or tangible questions. Of course, we may have, but then there were those who have, you know, people who have even studied some of those things and they understand better in depth. So I think it's only very fair if they come on board when those consultations are, as the consultations are ongoing, and to also just give their contributions and ask the relevant questions that are beneficial to us as well. Because at the end of the day, we don't want to find ourselves in a situation where the policies have been passed, and it's only then when you're asking questions, it's only then that we are made aware of what exactly was going on. But nonetheless, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. This is On The Radar News Analysis. To stay tuned, we'll be back shortly.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now we're getting into a discussion in regards to Starlink, that is the Communications Regulatory Authority of Namibia, CREN, in recently said that it has thus far received 625 applications for reconsideration in regards to following the license application submitted by Starlink Internet Services Namibia Pty. Now let's give a bit of background. On the 23rd of March 2026, CREN declined Starlink Internet Services Namibia Pty Ltd's application for a class comprehensive telecommunications service license and a spectrum license for satellite services. And with this also, they further recently gave out applications that were apparently 624 or 25 applications were received by them for reconsider giving Starlink a licensing. Now, with this comes up digital sovereignty, and that's one of the things that I really want us to get into today, and that is Namibia's stance is being framed as regulatory sovereignty, insisting foreign tech firms follow local ownership equity rules in strategic sectors, of which we will provide even more context as we go. Now, joining me in studio now is media technology journalism and media technology student, that is Ushita Mbatemwa. Ushita, very good afternoon and welcome to On The Reading News Analysis.
Good afternoon, happy, and thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you and have to discuss this quite interesting conversation. But I think before we get into anything further, I would want us to give a background on what digital sovereignty is, because most people might be wondering, why am I putting Starlink and digital sovereignty in one bracket?
Well, an explanation of digital sovereignty. Digital sovereignty is the ability of a state or organization or individual to control and manage their digital environment, including data infrastructure and technology, independently without external influence.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay. Now with Starlink having been rejected, and that was because, of course, Cran gave reasons as to why it rejected Starlink. And we will obviously get also into the pros and cons of this. But let's try to understand, why was it rejected in the first place? What are some of the criteria that they met, and which of the criteria did they not meet? Get into that for us.
Okay, so the Namibia Communications Regulation Authority of Namibia, CRAN, mm-hmm. and Minister of Information, MICT, mm-hmm. Rejected this because CRAN, the evaluation focused on six main criteria.
Yeah.
The three main criteria that were met by Starlink were, they fully complied as the requirement frequency spectrum mm-hmm. is available.
Okay.
And it was also established that Starlink possesses both the technical expertise and financial resources necessary to operate.
Mm. Let's pause here for now. Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get into the other ones. Technical and financial capacity. Is that one that is, I think, obvious even to the outsiders?
Yes.
That they will definitely, obviously, yeah. have the technical expertise and they will have the finances. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're talking about Starlink.
Yes, yeah. But Starlink is a big company. It's owned by SpaceX, that mm-hmm. is owned by Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
One of the biggest satellite companies mm-hmm. that is there. So they do have the expertise.
Of course.
Yes. They have the financial resources and everything. So they are fully ready to operate because they have operated before.
Mm.
Let's also mm. not overlook that they have operated before.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on.
And then also, Crane found that Starlink could potentially enhance competition in Namibia's telecommunications sector
mm-hmm.
because now, in Namibia's telecommunications sector, we only have MTC,
mm-hmm.
Telecom, and
Paratus.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, before we move on, it will enhance the competition within Namibia. I know we're still on the spectrums that they met and did not meet, mm-hmm. okay? But let's also focus on this one now to see, of course, there are a lot of people also that would want this competition to be enhanced. But then again, also, there are other people who may be thinking long-term about wanting local businesses to thrive mm-hmm. and not really have foreign businesses come and overthrive, you mm-hmm. know, to thrive in such a way they create such competition for the local businesses that in the decline. What's yes. your take on that?
Okay, so that would be it's good because we are getting something new mm-hmm. and then it's also something big. Because now the telecommunications companies that we have in Namibia can actually not cater for every average Namibian.
Mm-hmm.
So having somebody that can do it for us, That it's also,
Washita, do you know what's coming to my mind as we have this discussion now that we are at that about the competition? Remember when Speed came to Namibia?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And he was obviously live streaming his tour,
mm-hmm.
and like as he was doing in other countries, and then ending off here in Namibia, there was a technical glitch somewhere there.
Yes.
What would you say about that? If Starlink
was operating, like if he had to go to the villages that he was in the north, that they did not delay his streaming, he would have still streamed if Starlink was operating.
Yeah.
So that also, it's a broader issue.
Yeah.
Yes. And we should look at it in both ways. For as much as we want to protect ourselves, our digital sovereignty,
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
we have to be able to know, Starlink has to come to the table to say, no, I can do this. But then also, we also have to look on the other way because an average Namibian cannot access internet.
Mm.
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Let's get right into reasons why, into criteria why they failed, or the two criteria that they did not meet.
Okay, so among other reasons, Crane had lawful grounds to refuse the application.
Okay.
One of them was that under Section 46 of the Communications Act, a telecommunications license must be at least 51% Namibian owned. Mm-hmm. Starlink is 100% foreign owned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
By X.
Yes, SpaceX. By SpaceX. Mm-hmm. And then Namibia's law requires telecommunications infrastructure to fall under Namibia's jurisdiction. In Starlink's case, the infrastructure is not physically housed within Namibia, which raised concerns around regulatory oversight and national security, which is actually the digital sovereignty that we are talking about.
Exactly.
Yes.
Okay. Why is that very important that, and we will come back to the other one as well. Why is that very important that Namibia wants the infrastructure to be within the land itself, if Starlink was to operate here? How is that of significance?
Okay, the 51% ownership, is this now the 51% ownership?
No, the jurisdiction.
Oh, the jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's because for oversight, because there is no way. Oh, I know it happens because this is now where the other team comes in with their counter arguments and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But because it is happening, we have Meta, we have Alphabet, Google, Media, YouTube, mm-hmm, that are operating. We have all those companies, the big tech companies that are already operating in Namibia. But then we say, no, Starlink is special.
Yeah.
Starlink should be based here because Starlink is big.
Mm-hmm.
It's a satellite.
Okay.
It's a satellite company. So now imagine our data is being managed in America,
mm-hmm,
and you're here in Namibia in a small village and you don't even know where this thing is going or who's operating your things. Like, let's take, for example, what Facebook did when Meta, I think, what was it yet? I'm not sure if it was Meta. There was a time where Facebook, they had a data glitch there and our systems were down and we didn't know. Just for Mark Zuckerberg to come back and tell us, no, he lost some data. He lost it to who?
Yeah.
So I think this is the biggest, Namibia's biggest concern is, yeah, we have to oversee it right here in our own country.
Should anything go wrong, with there must be some sort of physical infrastructure that we can go to,
yes,
and drag you sort of to court and say, hey,
yes,
we need to hold you accountable for, mm-hmm, this. That's quite interesting. And also, when it comes to jurisdiction as well, I mean, we're talking about infrastructure that will fall under Namibia's jurisdiction, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Starlink's infrastructure is not physically housed within Namibia. And also, this also raises concerns about regulatory oversight and national security, which brings me to something that's interesting I saw on the internet not so long ago.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's about AI, yeah?
Yeah.
Whereby young children, two young children, they were all under 15, if I speak another correction,
mm-hmm,
committed suicide. Why? They were chatting with
chatbot.
A chatbot.
Mm-hmm.
Forgetting that this is a computer. And along with time, this chatbot started to insinuate ways on how this young person could commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
And until eventually they committed suicide.
Do you understand? Yes.
And sometimes something like this happens and nobody's being held accountable.
Yes.
Because we are like, no, it's just...
It's on the internet.
It's just a platform.
Yes,
you know?
It's a platform. Yes.
Yeah. But that platform, behind that platform, there are, mm-hmm, people who developed that platform that need to be held accountable.
Yes.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Namibia also wants to look into that. Okay, now about the 51% ownership. Don't you think that figure is a little bit too high? What's your opinion on that?
My opinion on that,
yeah,
I think the 51% ownership, because we have seen there's one web that operates in Namibia.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think they went through the 51%. I'm speaking under correction, but
okay,
I don't think they went through the whole 51% ownership.
Mm-hmm.
But for Starlink, because Starlink is a big company, and then their profits, if Starlink operates without the 51% ownership, the profit goes back to Elon Musk, straight,
yeah,
to America.
Yeah.
And the only thing he gets out with, what Starlink gets out with, will be the tax.
Mm.
So it will just be paying the tax, and then they take whatever profits they make from Namibians and they take it back to America. So the 51% ownership is more really on the economic beneficiation.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
in my opinion.
Yeah. Which in a way also obviously creates employment for Namibians.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it applies in other areas, not just and also this shouldn't be excluded. Let me put it like that.
Mm.
Okay. Now let's talk further on without physical presence, enforcement becomes impossible.
Yes.
Okay. Another aspect also, I think I would say to add to this is that it will also ensure transparency when they are, you know, right here in the land of the brief. Mm-hmm. That will also help enforce regulatory decision and safeguard national interest, because sovereignty also risks policy decisions that may be influenced externally by a foreign corporation.
Yes.
And service disruptions could be outside Namibia's control entirely, with the example that you gave there.
Mm-hmm.
Starlink would also undermine local providers by capturing market share and reduce local infrastructure investment and exporting profits abroad, as you rightly put it.
Yes.
And without strong regulation, Namibia risks losing control over sensitive digital information. Mm-hmm. Do you think at this particular point in time, would you say Namibia is digitally sovereign?
No.
Nope.
Africa, let's actually take Africa. Africa is not digital sovereign,
yeah,
because we do not own any platforms.
Mm.
But this is where the whole, because we, the West have actually platformized us. The only platforms that we have that we know of are all Western owned.
Mm-hmm.
Like the TikToks, Meta, Alphabet, all this, they're all foreign owned.
Mm-hmm.
But then they operate within our countries, and we do not have anything. Mm-hmm. They have monopolized everything.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Okay. Why would you say then it's important for a country to have digital sovereignty? In other words, to have control over over data, digital data that is being put out there, and to protect its people. Why is that quite important? I mean, put also into consideration not just individual data, but also company public data. That is government data, for instance. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know that government owns a lot of its people's data. Why is it very important that any country has digital sovereignty?
Well, for a country to have digital sovereignty is very important,
mm-hmm,
because there would be a gap, and people would take advantage of this because you do not own, mm-hmm, your own infrastructures and everything.
Yeah.
So that would be important. It should be. Let me see. There. Is that two?
Okay. Did you find it?
Yeah.
What you looking for?
Okay. So yeah.
Okay.
So for Namibia, we say digital sovereignty is both a strategic opportunity,
mm-hmm,
and a major challenge.
Okay.
A challenge as in like we do not have the necessary infrastructures to cover for Namibia's the digital gap, okay, because it's huge actually.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge one.
Mm-hmm.
So and then our future, our country's digital future depends on balancing national control with technological development also.
Mm-hmm.
So without the sovereignty, citizens' data could be stored overseas under different laws.
Mm.
Yes. So too much reliance on foreign companies reduces national power.
True.
Yeah.
True. That particular part that you see, our data could be stored overseas under different laws. Mm. Imagine if the law here, our Namibian law, says no company, perhaps no private company, should have access to government citizens, the government people, you know, like, mm-hmm, the citizens people. And then maybe perhaps a company that's operating here, their laws could be different, to say we have the right to sell information to a third party.
Yes, because they're doing it. They're actually doing it.
Yeah. Which puts us in a very critical position.
Yes, because now you have actually surrendered your country's information to a foreign company.
And in this day and age, information is very important.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Now, talk us on the core dimensions of this. On why. And also perhaps on the legal validity and the rule of law that demands regulators enforce and not, you know, enforce a statute.
or enforce the statute and upholds.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think this one actually talks on the, because it's first when Starlink applied,
mm-hmm.
there was 98% of Namibians that voted in favor of Starlink. So this is where the polls, the regulators enforce law and not polls. Namibians are saying we want Starlink,
mm-hmm.
but then the regulators are saying, but the law
says this.
It says this.
Okay.
So that is where Starlink comes in with a new, where CRAN comes in with a section, with act. The one that demands for the 51% of ownership.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. In other words, we will act on it based
on the law.
On the law and mm-hmm. what they achieve.
Yes.
On what, you know, like mm-hmm. what Starlink achieves and not on majority, on majority of what you're
what
saying.
What the people are saying.
Uh-huh,
yes.
Uh-huh.
Because Starlink has operated in Namibia before
yeah.
without a license.
Yeah.
So they are capable of doing it.
Okay.
But then what CRAN is saying, come to the table.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about it. Let's have let's meet each other halfway, because you cannot just want to be taking it all.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the economic beneficiation that I was talking about.
Mm.
They are saying you can come in, but let's talk.
Mm-hmm.
You can do it. Like maybe if Starlink does come to the table and say, okay, no, we are willing to give the 51% to Namibian,
mm-hmm.
then Namibia will be happy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now about the polls, that how CRAN based his decisions on according to the act and not on the polls or this 98%. I mean, of recent, public has given applications, of which 624.
Yeah.
Yeah, 24 from the public. 25 makes it from Starlink Pty Ltd. Mm. Now, do you think, of course, a lot of Namibians, because of their own desires that they want met,
mm-hmm.
you know, perhaps, for instance, I run a company and I need stable internet connections. I wouldn't really, consider the regulations that goes behind
yes.
it. Whereas CLEN, which has been put there, the Communications Regulatory mm-hmm. Authority, which is to regulate the communications aspect of Namibia, would then look at the bigger side. And even those who are probably going to the polls or those who are giving suggestions for it to be reconsidered, do you think do you think they probably have the know-how or the technical aspects or the negative implications that come with us, as opposed to just seeing the benefit that they would benefit at that point in time?
Well, I think right now we do not.
Mm.
We are yet to know what will be the implications if Starlink does operate in Namibia over the long run. Because remember the case of Ukraine, where Starlink was able to operate within 48 hours, Starlink opened a satellite in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
After a certain amount of days,
mm-hmm.
Starlink actually closed their satellite, and Russia was able to attack that area.
Yeah.
Because they did not have the connection anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a broader issue.
Yeah.
It also goes political, mm-hmm, economical, mm-hmm, mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. all this aspects.
And obviously, if I'm looking at my business, which should be online for a long period of time, mm-hmm. And I need a secure internet connection, I wouldn't consider some of those things.
Some of those things.
No.
And then, you know, the issue with also the deplatforming. You know, when Meta and Google, the case of Meta and Google in Canada and in Australia,
mm-hmm.
The Australian government said, we need to negotiate so that the ad revenues go back to the businesses, because now the businesses are losing because all the ad revenue is going to Meta and Google.
Mm-hmm.
And Google said, okay, now look, we are going to deplatform you. And the next morning, Australians woke up and there was no Facebook and there was no Meta.
Yeah.
There was no Google.
Mm-hmm.
And then they had to renegotiate, like, okay, look, let's talk. So we can actually wake up. Starlink can actually wake up and say, like, nah, I'm taking back my business to America. And then you, your business, yeah, that you actually wanted Starlink so bad because your business now has internet connection. Mm. But now there's nothing left.
And those are the things that need to be considered
yes,
when granting licensing to Starlink.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look also at pillars of digital sovereignty. But while you look at that, let me give a background on Southern Africa's divergent approaches to Starlink licensing, just to show that Namibia is not alone in demanding local ownership, but rather regional comparison of Starlink regulatory status. For Namibia, yes, rejected, based on 51% ownership, as according to the Communications Act Section 46, and CREN refused on ownership and jurisdiction ground. Mm-hmm. Now, for South Africa, it is pending or blocked with 30% ownership required. South Africa requires 30%, and Starlink has not yet complied with the B policy.
Mm-hmm.
And then for Zambia, it has been approved. No local ownership required or enforced. Now, Zambia is trying to debate data sovereignty after that.
Yes, after they have approved.
They've approved already.
Yes.
And you think they will get away with it?
I don't think so.
Zimbabwe, it has already been approved. Initially, it was cracked down on illegal kits, but it has been granted license in May 2024 for national connectivity. And then for Botswana, it has been approved, which was initially rejected, but it was fast-tracked after presidential meeting with Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
That's another conversation perhaps we would have another time, because, our president can override something. But then again, also they would need to put into consideration what laws are already in place. Now, let's go back to four pillars of digital sovereignty.
Okay, the four pillars of digital sovereignty would be protect national data, safeguard sensitive government, business, and citizen information.
Mm-hmm.
And then there also, we have economic independence, create jobs, promote innovation, and reduce foreign reliance. And we have policy autonomy, shape regulations on data privacy, cybersecurity, and AI, and inclusive development, support education, healthcare, and rural connectivity.
Okay.
Yes. So those are the four pillars of digital sovereignty.
Okay. Without, Mushita, on your opinion, without Starlink operating, for instance, if, let me say hypothetically, it's never granted the licensing to operate in Namibia, do you think we can well be able to increase digital connectivity even within, with even in rural areas, with the current communication technologies that we have in place?
We might, but we have a long way to go.
True.
We might. It is possible, but we have a long way to go, especially when it comes to the internet connection, because I come from a small village in Aminos, and you actually have to work hard to get internet connection. Like, you have you know, when people joke, you are at the village and you are getting on the tree, that is literal for us. Like, you have to get on the tree, or you have to go somewhere to get the internet connection. So we really have a long way to go.
True. Another question. If Starlink was to be granted licensing or license to operate within Namibia, do you think we could soon be back on the table to practically, not just to discuss it for itching ears, you know, to practically put into consideration payment for those who are operating or making content out there? Do you think that could also now be looked at, or perhaps it should also, or it would just be something that we will continue where we are now?
I think if Starlink operates, because Starlink also, then it also bring investors from outside, and then they say, oh, now maybe TikTok will say, oh, Namibians have Starlink, so let's start monetizing the influencers and the content creators. So maybe also that would come
along
with the packaging of us licensing Starlink in Namibia.
Interesting.
Because,
okay. Mushita, thank you so much for making time and coming to discuss this with me. I think it gives a broader understanding or a broader opening of mindset mm-hmm. for many people to say, okay, maybe we need to look at this and that more.
Yeah. Thank you for having me, Happy.
Sure. Yes. Okay. With that being said, let's pause right here and take a trip to the marketplace. Please do come through, air opinions and contributions around this conversation, around this topic. Perhaps share with us what you know that we don't know so that we can learn from you as well. For now, let's pause right here. Studio number 083-288-401. That's the number in studio. I'll see you after the commercial break.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081.
Care that goes where you go. That's international travel insurance through NHP. We facilitate cover of up to 10 million Namibian dollars per member for medical emergencies abroad as part of your membership. No extra charge. To receive your policy within minutes, simply register at nhp.com.na before you travel. T's and C's apply. NHP, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6%, is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the
eye.
Welcome back. And now let's go for economic indicators before we cross over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. $1 today is equals to 16 Namibian dollars point 29 cents. €1 is equals to 18 Namibian dollars point 85 cents. And one United Arab Emirates dirham is equals to 4 Namibian dollars point 43 cents. One Australian dollar is equals to 11 Namibian dollars point 47 cents. £1 sterling is equals to 21 Namibian dollars point 84 cents. One Chinese yuan is equals to 2 Namibian dollars point 40 cents. And last but not least, one Botswana pula is equals to 1 Namibian dollar point 21 cents. Meanwhile, South Africa, let's move now to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Let's start off in South Africa itself, whereby UCT study has revealed an alarming alcohol among young women, teen girls in South Africa. Let's take a listen on that.
Researchers surveyed more than 4,000 adolescent girls and young women in 6 high HIV risk districts across South Africa. The findings showed that alcohol was the highest among women aged between 20 and 24, particularly in urban areas such as Cape Town and Tshwane. Researchers also found that many participants who consumed alcohol engaged in hazardous drinking patterns.
The pattern of alcohol drinking was really that of a hazardous drinking, where nearly half of the participants were found to be hazardous drinkers based on our screening tool, which was the Audit C screening tool. And almost about a quarter of them were binge drinkers. And so these are the common patterns that we found where alcohol use was linked to contextual and social factors, specifically to district and to being out of school.
For many young women, alcohol remains closely associated with socializing and entertainment. Others say they drink to cope with personal pressures and challenges in their daily lives.
I'm just drinking for fun, no problems, just relaxable. But I don't know those people here around. They have too many like in emotions and stuff, you see. So I feel like if I must have that, I will forget about that stuff.
I drink because I have gone through many problems. However, I am not saying that young children should also drink and go through this, because it is not a solution to problems.
Because by dying, honey, oblosing us for problem.
While some young women view alcohol as part of their social lives, experts say a range of psychological, social and economical factors can also influence drinking behavior.
Factors, mental health conditions can also include issues related to self-esteem, self-confidence, or issues related to peer pressure. And thus, socioeconomic factors, we're talking about poverty, unemployment, lack of resources. Environmental factors could be living in spaces that are not conducive. So if you look at all of these psychological factors, they can influence one or teenagers to then need alcohol to cope.
Researchers are now calling for government to create stronger policies for alcohol screening programs, improve mental health support, and greater efforts to keep girls in school. Warren Engelbrecht, SABC News, Kimberley.
Meanwhile, hundreds of foreigners leave South Africa as xenophobia wraps up.
What's behind the current wave in South Africa of anti-migrant protests, some of which have turned violent? For weeks, groups have marched through parts of the country, ordering undocumented foreigners to leave by the end of the month. Now, several countries have repatriated hundreds of their citizens, including this batch of Nigerians who left on Wednesday night. At least two Mozambican citizens have been killed in the violence, and it's the latest in a recurring wave of xenophobic unrest that has left foreigners, even those with legal documents, worried for their safety.
The experience that I have here in South Africa is terrible. I'm 14 years here in South Africa, since going up and down, not stable. So I'd rather give up for me to go home with my life than going home with injuries.
You know, I cannot excuse the fact that, you know, it's all over social media. I mean, the ongoing unrest, the third tier of June, So I'm aware of that, so excited. It's time for me to go home.
Now, the rhetoric among the protesters involves blaming immigrants for social problems in South Africa, like crime and unemployment, even though analysts say this is scapegoating.
Enough is enough. We want our country back. We are not at all xenophobic. It's unfortunate because now we are misinterpreted around the world. We are not xenophobic. We have welcomed our brothers and sisters for so long, and we have lived with them for so long. But now it's time for them to just go and leave us to clean our country.
Now, South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has promised to take action against the vigilante groups stoking violence, and he's warned the public against taking the law into their own hands.
We will and must not allow groups to use the legitimate concerns of South Africans to destabilize our country through inciting lawlessness and violence. We will act against forces who are exploiting the concerns of our people about illegal immigration to further their own political, personal, and criminal agendas. We will not be fooled or influenced by social media campaigns that spread misinformation, fake news, and lies about people who are in our country.
Let's bring in Daniel Steyn, Deputy Editor at Ground Up News, a South African news agency that focuses on human rights and social justice. Daniel, it's good to have you with us. President Ramaphosa has spoken about the people protesting. He's actually said they have legitimate concerns. Do you agree?
That's a tough question. Whether or not the migration of people from other African countries to South Africa is a concern, I guess it's up for people to decide. We do have thousands of people entering the country to find work, mostly in contravention of our laws. But our laws are quite restrictive. If you think about it, it's very difficult to move to South Africa and find work legally. So the problem is that the laws actually do not allow for the numbers of people who are coming to South Africa to work in the country legally. And whether that's a concern is subjective. I would argue that it's not the concern that people think it is. The problem is that people are blaming issues such as unemployment, crime, poverty that the vast majority of South Africans experience, blaming that on the immigrants coming to the country, and blaming illegal immigration as well as immigration in general for our socioeconomic conditions.
I suppose it's even a problem putting this at scale, in form of scale, because first of all, South Africa has a problem tallying the number of undocumented migrants in the country. So is it even possible to prove or even disprove these claims against them, particularly on crime?
Yeah, we actually have no idea how many immigrants are in the country without papers. And by papers, I mean valid work permits. You'd find many people cross the borders, perhaps with passports and get tourist visas, perhaps cross borders through unofficial entry points, and just come into the country. And we have no idea how many there are. In terms of crime, there are a disproportionate number of immigrants in South African prisons, but the vast majority of them are in prison for immigration law offences. So people who were caught in the country without the proper documentation. So what that means is that we can't say, it means that there's no evidence that immigrants disproportionately commit serious crimes in South Africa. And the anti-immigration movements and protesters that have been gaining traction lately, they maintain that immigrants are responsible for the majority of crime in South Africa. And for that, there's just no evidence.
But this is not the first time there's been this kind of wave of anger against migrants. I'm just wondering what sparked the anger this particular time.
That's a complicated issue, and I think multifactorial. As you say, xenophobia is not new in South Africa. Anti-immigration sentiment is not new. Many of these myths and misinformation that we're seeing around immigrants in South Africa date back at least 20 years. For example, when Zimbabwe's economy collapsed and lots of immigrants from Zimbabwe came to the country with valid permits, I must add, we saw a big surge in xenophobic rhetoric and violence. Over the past 5 years, it seems that there have been coordinated social media campaigns spreading this misinformation, spreading anti-foreign sentiment. You have bots and paid accounts that amplify anti-immigrant voices.
Meanwhile, Nigeria warns against a reprisal over xenophobic attacks in South Africa.
It's been nearly 7 years since these scenes from September 2019, when police used tear gas to disperse protesters targeting South African-owned businesses following xenophobic attacks on Nigerians living in South Africa. Police authorities fear history could repeat itself.
Nigerians should not take the law into their hands. Nigerians should be law-abiding. We should not take the law into their hands in the name of reprisal.
Xenophobic attacks on immigrants in South Africa have reached a critical point. Authorities here in Abuja say their immediate concern is preventing a repeat of the 2019 violence when anger over xenophobic attacks in South Africa spilled onto the streets of Nigeria and targeted South African businesses. The renewed reports of harassment, attacks and destruction of property belonging to Nigerians living in South Africa has sparked outrage among many Nigerians. The government also says it's unhappy with the South African government's complacency and has not ruled out sanctions.
Criminal actions are perpetuated on our citizens. The police refuse to do anything. The South African government has not come out strongly, firmly enough to condemn these. People who are doing legitimate business have their shops looted. They have their shops set on fire. Children cannot go to school because they are intimidated in their schools. So to say that Nigerians who are in South Africa doing legitimate business are illegal migrants is absolutely untrue.
Analysts say the repeated tensions continue to reopen old wounds tied to Nigeria's support for South Africa during the apartheid struggle. Many Nigerians believe that solidarity has not been reciprocated.
Nigerians get angry because of what they did for the independence of South Africa. They feel bad that instead of reciprocating this role, the South African citizens or the people engaged in xenophobic attacks are attacking their fellow brothers.
More than 500 Nigerians signed up for voluntary repatriation as the Nigerian government begins to evacuate its citizens from South Africa. Kelechi Emekalam, CGTN Abuja, Nigeria.
Botswana steps up fight against foot and mouth disease outbreak.
Foot and mouth disease outbreak in Botswana has brought domestic meat production to a standstill. Restrictions on the slaughter of cattle, goats and pigs have led to the temporary closure of many butcheries and meat processing operations for several weeks now. This has disrupted supply chains and is affecting businesses across the sector.
Botswana, as a country, has never experienced this multiple outbreaks. It's also the first time in over 50 years that we have had the FMD coming from the southern part of the country. And remember, this is part of the country that has a large number of livestock. So the situation is it's very, very bad because it has affected both the north and the south.
According to authorities, the outbreak has also disrupted operations at the Botswana Meat Commission, or BMC. This has resulted in the suspension of exports to the European Union with a financial strain on farmers. The BMC is a government entity that buys, slaughters, processes, and markets Botswana's beef.
This is the situation that has also led us to now suspend our exports, including to the lucrative EU market. Where we've been, you know, enjoying the quota-free market. You know, Botswana and cattle, you know, you can't separate them. It's more of source of identity for us. So you can imagine now the loss of revenue that comes with it. You can imagine us as a government having to divert resources to try and, you know, and fight this scourge.
The Botswana government says it continues to work closely with farmers and traditional leaders to contain the outbreak. This, they say, includes vaccination programs, veterinary checkpoints, and disease control barriers.
The Department of Veterinary Services advised that of a method of control that is called containment method, where you identify the area that is affected and contain it, and contain try to contain the disease. Yes, primarily by vaccinating those affected and those around it so that it doesn't spread. And that is the strategy that we are following. Anyway, as BNBPU, as representing farmers, our main task is to make sure that the farmers adhere to this protocol.
The impact of the disease is being felt beyond Botswana's borders. As a key transit route within the South African region, Botswana sees significant cross-border movement of freight and agricultural transport. And the country is seeking cross-border cooperation.
We all agree that we need to pull together because this is a transboundary animal disease. If we don't pull together, we're not going to be able to win this scourge. Already between Botswana and Zimbabwe, we coordinate our vaccination programs, and that has helped a lot. That is why in the Northeast, we have already managed the disease. And now we are working in South Africa to make sure we also coordinate our vaccinations.
Botswana and South Africa have recently signed an endorsement of a comprehensive 2026 to 2028 action plan aimed at strengthening regional cooperation in the fight against the disease. Here is Njabela for CGTN in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Meanwhile, Egyptian startup uses AI and duckweed to enhance food security.
In Egypt's desert landscape, a tiny floating plant is being given a high-tech makeover. Inside this greenhouse, a protein is cultivating duckweed while using artificial intelligence and connected sensors to monitor every stage of growth. The company says the idea emerged after global food supply disruptions exposed vulnerabilities in agricultural systems.
So it all started during or after the Ukraine and Russia war. As unfortunate as it was, it affected the whole world when it came to supply of crops. And one of the countries that was highly affected was Egypt.
The startup's Orion platform combines hydroponic farming with Internet of Things sensors and AI models designed to track growing conditions and improve productivity. Engineers say the system can identify contamination risks, forecast greenhouse conditions, and help determine the ideal harvest time.
The IoT team, we deployed an Orion Pro, which is classified to two things: the IoT monitoring and controlling system, plus the Orion models.
According to the company, one of the system's biggest advantages is efficiency. The AI tools are designed to reduce costs while increasing yields from each growing cycle.
Detecting, it just detects the contamination sources just in order for us to cut our cost for about 40%, and determining the optimal harvesting time just in order for us to increase our yield production for about 20%.
The crop at the center of the operation may be small, but its potential is attracting attention. Duckweed grows rapidly and can thrive in brackish water, making it suitable for regions where traditional farming faces environmental constraints.
This tiny aquatic plant is an incredible and absolute powerhouse. It doubles in just 24 hours and requires no water or land compared to the traditional crops. We grow it in only brackish water.
Alprotein says the harvested duckweed is being developed into protein ingredients for food products. The broader goal is to create sustainable food production systems in areas where conventional agriculture is difficult.
We affect water, we grow proteins in the deserts, and we directly affect food security in non-arable regions.
As pressure grows on food systems worldwide, startups like Alprotein are betting that the answer may not lie in expanding farmland, but in reimagining how food is grown one tiny plant at a time. Caroline B, CGTN.
Marine scientists lead efforts to protect Tanzania's ecosystem, coastal ecosystem.
For marine scientist Nancy Iraba, 2021 marked a turning point. At the age of 27, she began learning to scuba dive. It was a journey that eventually made her Tanzania's first female dive master and part of a small group of Tanzanians who can work underwater.
90% of African marine scientists can't swim or dive, and most of the reasons were associated with high cost of diving. Like in Dar es Salaam, at that time there was only one scuba dive center, which was toward to the Western tourists.
Before becoming a diver, she studied octopuses, but getting her scuba diving certification opened the door to coral restoration, helping restore more than 10,000 corals. And through her non-profit organization, Action for Ocean, she has brought together marine scientists, storytellers, and coastal communities to work on conservation with a special focus on training and supporting women. As coral reefs in East Africa face mounting pressure from climate change, overfishing, and pollution, she believes it's important to build more local diving skills to protect the ecosystems that millions of people rely on.
Scientists claim that the Earth's best climate ally might be hiding in plain sight, as the oceans absorb most of the planet's excess heat, as well as a substantial amount of man-made carbon emissions. They believe that preserving oceans could be an invaluable tool in the battle against climate change.
Through a dive lab she set up, she has offered fully funded scuba diving trainings and certifications to around 100 divers, 49% of them being women. But challenges still persist.
When you go to the coastal communities, most of the wives, they depend on the permission they get from their husbands, you know, to do such activities. So if you want to encourage more women, especially in coastal communities, to come into the water, you need not to exclude the men. You need to make the men part of the conversation.
By 2030, Nancy aims to train 150 divers to expand the country's capacity to study the ocean. She hopes that with training in scuba diving, marine scientists, communities, and even storytellers will be inspired to conserve what they see. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Okay. Let's take a listen to interesting conversation on whether social media bans are a threat to democracy.
So Keir Starmer is expected to announce a ban on harmful social media apps next week. They essentially are now obliged to introduce some kind of restriction on children's access to social media. And they've done a consultation to decide what that restriction would be. That consultation has now happened. Of course, like, even after this passes, it could be subject to a judicial review. Meta is currently seeking a judicial review on some aspects of the Online Safety Act. But the consultation is interesting. Some of the findings that they found in this consultation is that ownership of mobile phones increases with age group. 19% of those aged 3 to 5 own their own mobile phone, increasing to 97%.
What does that mean, though? Like, how does a three-year-old use their phone?
Well, 37% of 3 to 5 year olds use social media,
which I think is
60% of 3 to 5 year olds have their own social media account. 3 to 5 year olds.
But does that include like watching YouTube videos? Because presumably, like, quite a lot of kids, their main social media use, age 3 or 4 or 5, would be being plonked in front of an iPad and watching.
I think that's a good point. So this when you read that statistic, that like most 3 to 5 year olds have a social media account, do they just have a YouTube account that's like got a playlist for Teletubbies or whatever, right? Like, but also the majority, almost all 13 to 15 year olds have a phone and use social media. But this is like, change is coming. So Australia obviously has already banned social media for under 16s. Spain is going to ban social media for under 16s, Denmark for under 15s, France has now approved a ban, Norway has, Singapore, Italy, Indonesia, Brazil, they're all considering bans right now.
And in terms of what could actually change here, because, I mean, when we talk about a ban, that presumably means that, like, if you are under the age of, say, 16, you cannot physically, like, sign up for an account or log on. But presumably there are other slightly less drastic versions of that, like time limits or curfews on use, or restricting specific features, like you can only hang out in this bit of the platform but not another bit.
And also restricting the harmful aspects of social media, like infinite scroll is being investigated.
I mean, or recommendation systems and how they affect you.
I spoke to a quite senior figure in the Labour Party the other week, and his take was that there's a feeling that they've done so little, social media companies, to make their platforms safe for young people, that like this ban is happening to show you that we have teeth as a regulatory, as the government, to regulate you. Maybe if you start making your platform safer, then we could talk about removing the ban.
I mean, we chatted a little bit about this when we interviewed Taylor Lorenz, which people can go back and listen to in the top comment feed, because she's got quite a, I don't know if radical is the right word, but quite a sort of contrarian view of the bans. Like, she basically thinks they're a really bad idea. Obviously, lots of people, including those who get in touch with us and speak to us, especially people who have kids, are quite keen on it. I think when it comes to what teenagers actually want and think, I find that when I've done various sort of investigations or documentaries and I've been speaking to them about what they're pushed, the overall consensus that I think exists between them is, look, we kind of want to be able to use social media in so much as we want to be able to talk to our friends and to look at stuff we find funny or interesting, but we don't want to be recommended stuff that we don't like seeing, like violence, like hate. And actually, we feel frustrated at the lack of agency we have. Like, several of them have said to me on multiple occasions, actually, about how it's really annoying when you say to the social media site that you're on, you click the button that's like, I want to see less of this, I want to see less of it, and then you just get pushed more and more of it.
Yeah.
And I guess my only kind of thought around this is, do you think that, having read through some of this stuff around the consultation, teenagers are actually being listened to in terms of what they think would be helpful or they want? That's not to say teenagers know best, because, like, you're a teenager. But...
So it's really interesting. So you're right. Taylor Lorenz, her views, I think, would seem radical, because, just to be clear, 74% of this country support the ban. And it's similar amongst young people. Half of 16 to 24-year-olds wish they spent less time, and three-fourths of 16 to 24-year-olds want tougher regulations to protect young people from social media. So, yes, young people want regulation. They are aware of, like, the screen time that they're having, the sleep that they're losing, the harms it's causing, and they're asking for this. So in that world, when you consider that everyone wants some kind of regulation, you have people like Taylor Lorenz coming out and saying that this, you know, this ban is a kind of political tool to suppress dissent, to suppress, for example, LGBTQ youngsters, like, meeting online and developing their sense of identity, which are totally valid points. People see that as radical.
I think as well that the reason that we've reached this point, which some might consider extreme, or actually in retrospect, as time goes on, might be, you know, people might think, well, why didn't we do this ages ago? But the reason we've reached this point is because of lack of accountability from the social media companies, right? And because of an inability to build alternatives that perhaps could serve teenagers and kids better. So, you know, if you were putting me, just with my kind of experience of investigating this world, like, putting me in front of the drawing board and saying, Mariana, like, what would you do here? And obviously it's our job to point out the problems, not come up with the solutions. But one of the things that a lot of people mentioned to me is kind of this idea of, like, algorithmic pluralism, and how can we build different types of platforms that, where, for example, under 16s won't be pushed the kind of stuff that an over 16 or an adult can be pushed.
Okay, and that has now brought us to the conclusion of today's episode of On the Radar News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Onkananda Dengue program, brought to you by Matthias Hangara. Also, do stay tuned for Saturday shows, that is tomorrow, and Sunday shows right here on Eagle FM. Now, if you want to continue to listen to my voice, please do tune in for Life Lessons from 1900 hours to 2100 hours. From Indafa, happy Shusha, it is goodbye, and have yourself a wonderful weekend.